life. And at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Bakri M.
Thank you, Mike. Agne Bakri. Dang, y'all cheated, man. I thought y'all were going to read all the readings. You know what I'm saying? At any rate, I want to thank CPR CNA 22 for inviting me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope about this new way of life. And I brought some cards with me because I didn't want to drag all my books up in here, something to kind of keep me on point about what we're going to share about today. I guess to tell y'all about this new way of life, maybe I need to just tell you a little bit about how it was, because usually if we say that something is good or bad, we say good or bad compared to what, okay? And in our literature, you know, in the preface of our basic text, it talks about the full fruit of a labor of love, that it lives in the harvest, and that always comes in its right season. It's been a long, long journey, y'all, and I was trying to give it some thought earlier about, you know, how my addiction path ran, and, you know, I'm 54 now, and I had my first drugs when I was like 14, you know, but there have been some periods of abstinence, but the main thing is that I'm here now, and, you know, this new way of life is something beyond anything I could ever imagine, you know. And I was looking through the literature, you know, and all through the literature, I was just finding different places where it talks about it, this new way of life, you know. And even when every meeting, practically, we talk about just for the day. We say, you know, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life, right? And, you know, new way of life is something that used to really sound very strange to me when I was caught in the grips. You know, I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? Is there another way to live, you know? Because you're caught, man, you're caught in the grips. It's just so hard to see anything different. You know, your world shrank. My world shrank to a 3-block radius. You know, if you looked at me from an aerial view, I probably look like Pac-Man or something running around the same neighborhood in the 3-block radius. You know what I'm saying? Say, what the hell's wrong with him? From crack house to oil joint to the alley to the abandoned car and then the same vicious cycle over and over again. And like I say, you know, it went on for a long time. You know, my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous came in 1987. And, you know, the court sent me to, and I was in a methadone program. I drank meth for 21 months. You know what? I drank meth for 21 months. I never missed a day. Only time I didn't go was when I was lucked up on a trip to Atlantic City and they gave me take home. But it never, you know, occurred to me that I got something, that I need to have something in me, right? I need to have something in me to make me feel okay, to make me feel human and make me be all right in my own skin. And all the time I'm becoming more and more afraid of reality. I'm becoming more and more afraid of, you know, responsible living, you know, and then, like I say, I did that for 21 months, and I went to meetings, and when I was on methadone, informed members of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, suggested that I not share while I was on the meth, and I would share anyway, and they would say, oh, there go that meth talking again, you know. But I stayed there, and I got clean, and, you know, I stayed clean for those 4 years from 88 to 92. And what happened, y'all, in that 4 years is I amassed a lot of stuff, man. I had a business and all that stuff, and, you know, I was making money, and then the insidiousness of this disease kind of just eased me right on back into lifestyle, you know, or death style, however you want to say it. You know, the thing is that, you know, I began doing favors for hustlers because I was clean. I was looking respectable and acting responsible. And it was, man, can you do this? And then it was, man, can you help me get a sign for a car? And then it was, man, can you help me count this money? And then it was, man, can you move this joint from one place to another? Needless to say, I was hustling in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Now, that's part of my story I'm not very proud of, but it's my story. You know, this is a place where we come, we share our experience, strength, and hope. Maybe that might help somebody, right? Because, you know, the first step, I don't know why it says it, of course, but it says social acceptability doesn't equal recovery. You know, and I was on that. I was on that. I think this thing was about to look good. I came in here, people had taken baths, you know what I'm saying, and they was clean, and they was wearing jewelries, and they had cars, they was going back to school, all these good things was happening to them. Yeah, Dirk, they had teeth, you know what I'm saying? Because I damn sure ain't had nothing here. Y'all told me to keep coming back, and the dentist told me to keep coming back, and I got some teeth, right? You know what I'm saying? Because I'm a grinner anyway. I like to smile and laugh and have fun. Shit, y'all was holding me up. I used to do it like this. Cover my mouth and stuff, you know, put a magazine on my mouth or something, anything, you know. Low self-esteem, we'll talk about that later. At any rate, you know, that path eventually, you know, in that process, I gained a lot of stuff. I had a car wash, had all these businesses and stuff. But somewhere along the way, I forgot that I was an addict. I don't sell this shit, I use it. You know what I'm saying? I took that blow, and I remember that day in 1992 like it was yesterday. Because I had 4 years clean, y'all, and then I took that blow. And it was the most devastating feeling right up there with my mother's passing away, right, that I ever experienced. Because it felt like I had just lost all of y'all. See, because my character defects wouldn't let me get back, right? My foolish pride, my grandiosity, you know, my know-it-allism and my big-shotism and my, you know, just the whole thing, I didn't make it back. So I'm not one of those that use one day and then come back here the next day and tell y'all I use. I got to keep going, you know. I know that about myself, and I don't play with it, you know. So I ran for 7 years, man. When I took that blow in 92, like, damn, they like spot removal. It removed a house, removed a car, removed the businesses. Damn, they removed my ass, you know what I'm saying? But needless to say, if all that stuff meant so much, why did I use again? You know, these are, you know, these are dots I could not connect. And after I made it back 7 years later, y'all told me that it was really about the same addict we use again, right? That this process calls for a profound change in your behavior and your thinking, right? What did I have to change? Just every damn thing, you know? Because I had grown up with a whole lot of crazy stuff about what a man should be, you know? All big boys don't cry. Y'all know the drill, you know? See me in a fight with the bear. Don't help me help the bear. All that stuff, you know? And I was 46 years old when I got clean this time, man, you know, and you know, God told me, Henry C. say, man, you just been holding on to a whole lot of nothing, you know. So it's best you want to try to take all those ideas and find out what you can do with them, you know, get rid of them and try to change that stuff. And in our basic text in chapter 5, What Can I Do? It talks about our disease involved much more than just the using of drugs. So our recovery must involve much more than simple abstinence. Recovery is an active change in our ideas and attitudes, okay. And then we talk about, you know, around here, we talk about this new way of life, because I was 46 and I was sad because I saw a lot of people, they was getting clean and they was a lot younger than me, okay? And I'm like, damn, I had a feeling that I had missed out on a lot. You know what I mean, Larry? I thought I had missed out on a lot. But then come to find out, I ain't missed out on that much, because y'all told me that Narcotics Anonymous may not add years to your life, but it certainly will add some life to your years. Ain't no need me being sad about getting old anyway, because God told me, said, man, you know you old when somebody compliments you on them nice alligator shoes you got on and you barefooted. You know, I believe in, you know, the laughter and stuff is part of this new way of life, y'all, right? Ain't no need me being up here tooth and nut nail serious about it, because the worst, the biggest, and the greatest thing that happened to me already, happened for me already, right? The obsession to use on a daily basis, all day, every day, has been lifted, okay? That was the biggest deal right there. After that, it was all pretty much academic. It was a matter of going to meetings, getting a sponsor, right? Letting somebody help me, letting somebody love me, right? And try to help somebody, connecting with a God of my understanding, right? Embracing that personal relationship and, you know, relying on his guidance and strength to keep me clean, okay? That's how it was. Some of the gory details include, you know, like in that 7 year period, I experienced spiritual deprivation, you know, things that I had never experienced prior to that. But like I say, it goes way back, and it wasn't until I got to Narcotics Anonymous that I found out some stuff was happening before I even used. See what I'm saying? I'm talking about I got a chance to look back at childhood. You know, I didn't understand that early on in my life, I was dishonest with feelings, right? I would lie about the way I felt. And then I come in here, and y'all tell me, look, man, y'all sharing about everything up in here. You seem like the crazier you are in Narcotics Anonymous, the more they love you. You know what I'm saying? And I come in here and start talking about how, yeah, I remember that night. I was a little boy, and my father and mother got to argue. My father used to drink, you know, and we were your normal dysfunctional family, you know. And he had, him and mama got in the bathroom. I thought he was going He got my mother over in the bathtub and turned, act like he was going to turn the water on. I thought he was going to drown my mother. I'm a little boy. I'm terrified. What the hell? Why is Daddy trying to kill Mama? But then it got over with. You know, we went to school the next day. But when they asked me how I felt the next day, I said, I'm fine. I'm all right, you know. But I was burning up inside. I'm confused. I don't know what the hell happened last night, you know. So that's when I started learning how to be dishonest with my family. I mean, with my feelings back then. You know, we talk about this being a feeling disease. I come to hear y'all tell me that feelings are the things that I have the most of that I know the least about, right? So I get to learn about my feelings. I get to identify them. I get to know. And most of it is just based in self-centered fear. I'm all hung up in my own stuff, my own obsessions, right? And me and Junebug, we sitting on the bench playing with cats. I shared this with some of my buddies in my area, you know. And Junebug popped all his damn caps. And then it's time for me to pop my caps. Every time I get ready to hit, we ain't had no gun. We know that you put them in. We had the hammer. We just hit them on the bench with the hammer, right? And every time I try to hit mine, he pulled my caps out of the way. So I got angry, and I just hit Junebug in the head with the hammer. Bam. So y'all told me that was probably misplaced anger, okay? You know, and then obsession. You know, obsession was something I knew about before I used any drug. Hell, me, my father used to make these hot-ass pickles, right? And, I mean, he put onions in them, and, I mean, he put garlic in them, he put hot sauce in them, and they were so damn good after they sit for 2 or 3 days, right? But the thing is, to keep them from us, he used to put them way up high on top of the refrigerator on the shelf. God damn, boy, me and my sister found a way to get up there one day and eat them pickles. And we could not stop. We said, we're just going to get one or two, okay? We're going to get one or two. And God damn it, we ate the whole jar. Needless to say, what happened when he got home, wanted to know where his pickles were. We both got an ass whipping that night. At any rate, and then I learned about resentments. You know, I started stealing when I was 9 years old. Me and my sister was down there in Kresge. Some of y'all from D.C., y'all know what Kresge is, an old drugstore, right? We stealing. I get caught. She don't get caught. I get my ass whipped right in the damn police station. I think I had a resentment about her for about 20 years. I had a resentment before I knew what a damn resentment was. You know what I'm saying? But I'm just saying, all those things, you know, came to understand after getting Narcotics Anonymous. Man, I'm going to tell y'all, that last run was a Timberland ass whipping. I'm talking about custom, state-of-the-art, utter desperation. I'm talking about, man, being dirty all the time, looking bad, being hungry. You know, I talk about how, you know, I ain't buying no soap, and when I did buy soap, it was supposed to be in crack. You know what I'm saying? I be talking about, man, look, they think it's a joke. It ain't no joke. I was looking down. I was using the bathroom one time. I looked down, and my underwear started separating from the waistband. I had them on so long. You know, wore my underwear to wasn't nothing left but the waistband. I was wearing thongs before the women were, before they even got popular. You know what I'm saying? God damn. You know, I didn't use everything. I know I lost some brain cells, but one particular time to describe the way that my family viewed me, because, you know, we would love to think that we are the only ones we hurt when we use. But there's probably nothing further from the truth. When people love you and care about you, it's a very hurting thing, even though your drugs gonna tell you, oh, shit, I'm all right. I ain't doing it to them. You know what I'm saying? But if they love you and they care about you, they hurt when they see you in that state, okay? And for the lack of better terms, one time I smoked too much PCP, and I went in a crazy house, and I told them I was Jesus. And they said, okay, we're going to show you what happened to the last Jesus that was here. And they strapped me down. But when I finally got up the next day and answered those questions they want you to answer, see if you're competent to be released, I answered them, and I got out. And my buddy called my mother and said, Miss Sally, you know, Bakri has been released. But by the time my mother called my sister and told my sister that I had been released, she didn't say he's been released. She said, he's loose. Now, that's a hell of a way to describe your child. You know what I'm saying? But it's a true bill. You know what I mean? And, you know, things went on and Mama was hurt. But at the bottom, y'all, the last time in 2000 when I got clean, you know, it was like that spiritual death, for real. It was like that, you know, just being gone. And, you know, I was just really waiting to die. I figured eventually I'm going to steal one of these guys' stash or something, and they just going to just going to kill me, or I'm going to finally OD. And by this time, the disease of addiction told me that I was a pharmacist, and I was writing prescriptions for class 3 narcotics. And I know ain't none of y'all never done that before, you know, pill stuff. And I was over in Fairfax, and the Fairfax police caught me, and they told me, just like the other people told me, we're going to show you what happened to the last pharmacist that was here. And they gave me 90 days. Now, for all intents and purposes, when you get locked up, it's the worst damn day. You know, when you get locked up, it is a terrible thing, especially when you think about being in that bullpen sick, okay? But for me, little did I know then, it turned out to be one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. It was the best day, right? And in that process, I was in jail, very toxic. I often say I was toxic to the highest of toxicity. Of course, before that, I was cruddy to the lowest of cruddivity. I don't even know a such word, but it should just sound like something I was. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, they got me. But you know, y'all, you know what really happened in that incident that was very, very paramount in my whole process was that when I was about to leave jail, I was afraid. I was scared. Now, you would think somebody would be glad to get out of jail. But I was sitting there, and I was saying, and all the other guys was happy that they was leaving. I was saying, only place I got to go is back to the places I had been. And it was scary to think about it because, you know, I had got a little bit of clarity, right? And that's when I said those three words that many of us have said, God help me. Because I knew at that point I was beyond any help, any human help, right? I knew I was beyond anything that any doctor could do for me, right? And I knew that if I didn't ask God, you know, that I surely was going to die. But somehow I said, man, you know, just a little hope crept in, you know? I got, you know, we talk about hope. That's one of our main spiritual principles, you know? Because, you know, if you come to a convention like this, man, and you see so many people clean and recovering, this really almost ain't like no convention. It's like a damn big family reunion, ain't it, Larry? You know what I'm saying? You see everybody out there hugging each other like they've been knowing each other. You know, it'll blow your mind. It's a big-ass family. You know what I'm saying? You know, but like I said, and then I called my folks and I asked them. I said, can y'all please find me a program? Because somewhere it occurred that I need some long-term treatment. Right? 28 days ain't going to help the brother. You know what I'm saying? And they say, okay, well, we're going to see what we can do over here in D.C. You find out if they have anything over there in Virginia that'll help you get yourself together. Because by this time, they had just kind of written me off, right? Because they realized that they told me that if I won't trash my life, that they're not going down the drain with me, right? And it comes a point, y'all, on the other side of that thin line that we sort of have to leave people alone, man, you know, to let them get what they're going to get. Because sometimes we help them, but we think we help them, but we really hurt them, you know. And they dropped me like a hot potato, man. I couldn't get a pack of cigarettes unless they bought it. Sure, I couldn't get a haircut because I never made it to the barbershop with the money. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is, they say, okay, we're going to see if we can find a program. And they came and got me that Saturday morning. And they picked me up. I ain't had no clothes or nothing. The clothes I had went over the bag up. They smelled terrible. And they came down that hill with that one bag of clothes. And they dropped me off at a meeting at 12 o'clock, a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And that was in May of 2000. Then the next day I went back and ran to my sponsor. And they never told me where I was going. You know, you teach people how to treat you, you know, because I ain't never stayed in no treatment program before. And they never told me where I was going. And then come Tuesday morning when they was doing intake, we was riding to the place. My sister kept telling me, you're going to the ARC. You're going to the ARC. You know, I thought it was like Betty Ford or some shit. You know what I'm saying? Shit, I'm going to, that thing stands for Adult Rehabilitation Center, you know? Yeah, then they never told me. Tuesday, we riding up Kenilworth Avenue, and she say, so I said, where we going? She said, we going to the Salvation Army, we're going to make a donation, and donation is your ass. You know? And they did that. They dropped me off and pulled away, you know? But I went in there, and little did they know that I was tired, y'all. I was one of them tired ass, beat up, you know, just had enough addict that was ready for anything that was going to help me, you know. And, you know, I stayed there for 22 months. But the thing is I had me a basic text. And I studied my basic text and I, you know, was able to work on my foundation and learn how to, you know, how important steps 1, 2, and 3 were in my life. You know, because when I got to 2, you know, that, you know, when I got to the end of 1, I had to do 2. And I had to get me some hope, you know. this new way of life, really, you know, it has a lot to offer y'all. I told you, it offers rest. I mean, I slept in a bed every night since I've been clean, you know, whether I wanted to or not, you know what I'm saying? Baths, man, I love shower gel, you know, deodorant, cologne, stuff that smell good, you know what I'm saying? And most of all, clean underwear, okay? You know, by the process, by just keep doing what somebody tell me, I got a job, man, got health benefits, got a 401k. I ain't know what the hell no 401k was before I got the narcotics. Now, I those goddamn charge on the quarters. They ain't never caught or something. That's what it sound like, you know? I take trips now, you know, and I leave the neighborhood, you dig? You know, I've been able to go to some world conventions and stuff like that. And shoot, man, and then, like I say, I stayed there and then got a job, and now I do what I do. And Narcotics Anonymous has been immensely wonderful to me. You know, some things have happened that were unexpected. You know, one of my best friends died, and in 2005, we was in Hawaii at the World Convention, and he went in the hospital, and shortly after we got back, Mike C. passed, you know. So, you know, but like I said, you know, ultimately, in this process, what we, a lot of times, what we want y'all is, you know, we don't know it, but when we come to meetings and we get what we get from meetings, we get our love tank filled up, okay? It has to do with, a lot of times, what we want and what we need and what we get in Narcotics Anonymous is love, okay? And that is something that, you know, it just ain't no whole lot of it down on the corner, okay? And it is by, you know, divine intervention. It's by the grace and mercy, you know, that God has put me in a position to serve, okay? Now, I got something here from, you know, I found most of the stuff about our new way of life in the 11th and 12th step. And it works high and wide. Step 11 says, we see that regardless of the presence or absence of material success in our lives, we can be content, we can be happy and fulfilled with or without money, with or without a partner, with or without the approval of others. That's a big piece, right? Because my thing was always trying to set it up so you can think good about me, right? But then y'all told me that what God got for me, and I just need to work on what he got, you know, for me, you know. Also, in the 11th step, it talks about the image of the kind of person that we would like to be is a fleeting glimpse of God's will for us, okay? See, because what I think, you know, it's very limited. My scope is, you know, limited. And what the thing, often our outlook is so limited that we can only see our immediate wants and needs. It's not so much that I feel that God is in my heart, right? But by this care I've been given with this new way of life, I feel like almost that I'm in the heart of God, okay? See, the process, it really ain't about, as I was sidetracked and I was bamboozled or whatever, to think that this was a look good, because this ain't no look good, right? If you stop, you know, what we say, if you stop copying, you can start shopping. Right? You're going to get your stuff. Your stuff is going to come, right? But the idea is that it's not so much that I'm going to get rich, but that I will be enriched, right? That I'll get some spiritual principles in my life. You know, and all that stuff was just so sissified. Honesty, hope, you know, perseverance and patience and stuff. Come to find out, it's the dynamitest thing in my life, you know? And like I say, you know, I could never really pay Narcotics Anonymous for what I've been given as a result of this program, you know. And if you knew around here, you know, we say stick and stay. Live the program. You can count on us. Like, you know, the way I see it, y'all, is that it's sort of like having an endless stream of green lights, you know. It's like being able to proceed, you know, you get through things that used to baffle you, you know, things intuitively. You know, it just don't upset you like they used to, you know. And like I say, you know, this program has been good to me. I'm in the Central Maryland area. My home group is at Works High and Wild on Monday nights. It's a step study. I love my home group. We have a greeter at the door. It is important when you come to a meeting, I think, that, you know, a newcomer be made to feel welcome. You know, that somebody give them a hug. A lot of times it could mean the difference of 5 minutes whether a newcomer's going to stay or keep going, you know. So we, you know, we put that down. At any rate, I think that's about enough out of me, y'all. I want to thank y'all for helping me stay clean another day. I want to thank y'all for letting me share. I'm going to keep coming back.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, Bakri, thank you for your honesty. Our next speaker is a personal friend of mine, and he's been coming to Ocean City for about since 1996, Larry. And I'm originally from Michigan, and Larry is from a city called Ypsilanti, Michigan. Don't too many people know how to pronounce it or have heard of it. But I'd like to introduce now Larry G. from Ypsilanti, Michigan.
All right, my good. Hello, family. I'm Larry, and I am an addict. And first of all, I'd like to thank my higher power for giving me the opportunity to share another day with recovering people. I'd like to thank CPR, CNA for giving me the opportunity to speak before you, because this isn't my area. However, it's safe to say that my new way of life began here at this convention, because this was the first time that I saw the family come together as a group. You know, I had been in recovery for about 2 years, and my father died. And at his funeral, I found out that I had a sister that I had never met. She was my age, and she was in recovery. We had the same problem. So in the process of grieving the loss of my father, you know, my higher power delivered another family member to my life. And that family member was living here in Maryland, and she invited me to come down here and be with you all. And I've been doing it as frequently as I can ever since. I came for 3 years in a row, 96, 97, 98, and then I took a little time off. And I was here 2 years ago, and I'm here now, and I'm glad to see you all here. The new way of life is not something, you know, that I really wanted. Because I was totally comfortable with my old way of life. You know, I was trying to, you know, do the things that I was comfortable with. I didn't want to step out of my comfort zone. And everyone was trying to force a new way of life upon me. I mean, everyone. Family, jobs, systems, you know, the authorities. And everyone could force it upon me, but only I could accept it. You know, had I known that this is what you were offering me, I would have accepted it long time ago. Long time ago. You know, one of the, my favorite sayings in our fellowship is that we are not responsible for our disease, but we are responsible for our recovery. Because that new way of life, you know, it goes way back in my family. My dad, and he used to run moonshine down in North Carolina, and they chased him out of the state. So he ran to Michigan, and he ran to Michigan and then sent back for his family. He had to get out. He didn't have time to take us. He had to leave real quick. And him and my mother used to like to, you know, book them numbers, you know, before they had the state lottery. You know, some families used to could benefit off of that. And so they had a little number thing going on at the home, you know. So, you know that lifestyle, you know, has always been, you know, bred inside of me. You know, we never had enough, so we had to do things to improvise, to compromise. And if you do something for so long, it's not really wrong. Nobody can tell you that it's wrong. And, you know, because I use drugs for a long time, no matter where I went. You know, started in high school, and it followed me through the military, followed me to all of my jobs, and, you know, consequently caused me to, you know, once I'd reach a certain point, no matter where I was at, you know, I'd always sabotage whatever success I was experiencing because of drugs, because, you know, the higher I got, you know, in life, you know, the higher I got in drugs, you know, I just wanted to bring more and more and more. And I couldn't, you know, really see this pattern because I was caught up in it. But, you know, I didn't choose to be ran to Michigan because of, you know, the things my dad was doing. I didn't have a choice, you know, on the lifestyle they chose to provide for us, you know. So, you know, that, you know, life didn't give me the things that, you know, I saw all the other kids getting, you know, material things, status in society and whatnot. But it was all that, you know, my family could provide for us. My dad was a proud guy. You know, I remember having a little job at a supermarket, and the lady knew that we was poor. She would always send a little food home with us for us to eat. And one time she bought me a baseball glove, you know, because her kids had them and everything. And I was all happy and took my baseball glove home. And my father, being so proud, he made me take it back and give it to him. He said, "You have a glove when I could get you a glove," you know. And I said, "Wow." You know, so I held a resentment toward him for that. But I realized that he was a very, very proud man. And I, you know, I could almost, you know, just put my name on your story, Barclay, because I went the same routes, you know. But anyway, that's the way life was before I had any decision on it, you know. My family did things to provide. I watched what they did. I emulated them. And whenever I got to be of age where I could somewhat make decisions, you know, I just made wrong decisions and found it easier, you know, I could fast track, you know, where I was trying to get in life, you know, by, you know, choosing, you know, dysfunctional avenues and whatnot. But I was comfortable with that. My first treatment center was in 1992. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, the drugs, you know, that I thought I was recovering from. You know, I was having problems with supervisors, you know, and I was having problems with you know, spouses and things like that, you know. So I didn't think I had a drug problem, so I went to treatment for them just to get them off my back. And when I got there, you know, my life was in such a shamble, you know, they put me in the mental ward. They didn't think that I had a drug addiction, so they watched me for 5 days. And after 5 days, they said, "Well, you don't have a mental case, you got a drug case." And I didn't want to hear that, and so they sent me home. And a week later, I was back in there again, you know, telling them that I agree with you. You know, I do have a problem. And, you know, but I didn't think that it was any problem with weed or cognac. I thought it was just, you know, that one drug that got me there. So, you know, naturally, I got out. I continued. I didn't use, you know, one substance for 12 years, you know, but I was still smoking pot, drinking. I was a loan shark, fornicator, and was doing everything, you know. And I realized that, you know, I'm caught up on this lifestyle, this way of life, you know. You know, it wasn't until I started doing a certain drug that, you know, I started having a problem with that life. So, you know, I thought it was just that drug. So in 2 years, well, after going 12 years without it, I got tired. And I decided that, and I watched what everybody was doing around me, and I figured this, the only way that I could get the energy that I needed to continue the life that I was going to continue was to use, because that's all I knew how to do. In doing that 12 years, I mean, I really thought that I was clean, you know, simply because I wasn't using that one thing. I really thought I was clean because I didn't have the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous to tell me that I had to abstain from all substances in order to recover. You know, I had to completely change my ways of thinking, my ways of living, or go back to using. You know, and I did it time and time after again, you know. But after that 12 years, and I got tired, and I made that decision, because we're all only a decision away from using. One decision, that's all it takes, you know. It doesn't take, you know, any act, you know, it's just a decision in our mind. But I chose to use, and in the next 2 years, I was in and out of 10 treatment centers, two mental hospitals, and I had to go to the county jail, you know, because up until this point, I didn't think I'd ever have to go to jail to stop using. I hadn't been to jail. You know, I'd been pulled over a bunch, and luckily not taken to jail, but they took me to jail, and all it would take was $100. They said, "You need $100 to bail yourself out." And I wouldn't pick up that phone. I wouldn't call anybody, you know, to come get me, you know, because in jail I felt safe. Because when they shut that door, you know, that door, I mean, it's a eerie feeling when that metal door slammed, blam. I didn't feel locked up. I felt like my disease was locked out, you know. And I surrendered. That was the first time I really surrendered, because up until then, I was constantly trying to figure out where my next one was going to come from. When they slammed that door, I knew wasn't nothing happening. And one thing that happened while I was in the county jail was that my higher power turned drugs into candy bars and cookies. You know, because the same guy who used to sell me drugs that I used to use with, now they had control of all the candy, you know, the cookies, and guys were standing in line, you know, they was giving up candy bars on credit. You know, when somebody dropped a little bit in my account, I had to give it all to the dope man and stuff, you know, to the cookie man, whatever, you know, go buy me some T-shirts or whatever, you know. So I realized that, you know, I had this addictive behavior, you know, and my problem wasn't drugs. My problem was addictions, you know. I become addicted to anything that's good to me. So while I was in locked up, I took one word, and I want to make this as simple as I can, the word repentance, you know. I had to repent from being myself, you know, and that's all I had to do. And if anybody knows the definition of repentance, it's a total change of mind, body, and way of life, total change. And I said, well, that's what I'll do. I took that word, I put it on my little mirror in my cell, and I looked at it. And I looked at it, and I said, this is what I have to do. You know, this, no matter what else, I have to do this. And after 5 months, they told me I couldn't stay in there any longer, you know, because I stayed in there for 5 months, you know, and all I needed was $100 to get out. But I would not make that call. Because, like Barcrae said, I was scared to leave. I knew what I was going to do. So I got out, and my family picked me up. And I slept on my sister's couch for a month. My brother was a carpenter. My brother-in-law was a carpenter, and I worked with him. They were Seventh-day Adventists. I went to church with them on Saturday and went to other churches on Sunday and was making some meetings. So then I went back before the judge. And I had my family standing beside me, and they said, we're going to take care of him. We've got a job for him. He hasn't used in 6 months. Can we take him home? She said, no, his track record shows that he needs to go into one more treatment center, you know. I can't allow myself to let him do what he's been doing. Something has to change. He needs a new way of life. So, I didn't argue with this judge one bit. It was a female. And I realized that, you know, there's somebody in my life that knows a little bit more about this than I do. And I didn't fight that. And here comes my story again. I chose to go to the ARC. Same. Was you there? You didn't go with Nipsilani, did you?
No.
But anyway, and that was a great thing for me, because when I went in there, and if any of you know what goes on at ARC, they have a lot of donations that come through there. And you have to actually work. It's an adult rehab center. You have to actually work. And you get paid about $1 a day, but you got a bed to sleep in. And, you know, you get fed every day. So everybody around me was stealing. You know, the truck driver had him a barrel. If they come across a good donation, he'd throw it in. And everybody, I'm picking up bags of donations, and other guys is tearing them open, and I'm looking around. And I realized that my purpose for being there was to not steal these people's stuff. Because whenever I shoot that move, you know, to get that instant gratification of getting over on somebody, you know, just trying to get ahead, that's what my disease wanted me to do. To make me have that low self-esteem about myself. And I had to fight not taking those donations. You know, I had to fight not breaking those rules. They wanted, you know, me to, you know, you can't smoke in this area, you can't smoke in this area. We had to, you know, make up our bed every day and set our chair on our bed so the sweeper could come through there and sweep the floors and without the chair being in his way. So, but when I left that that adult rehab center, one of the counselors, he said, why don't you come back and chair this meeting? Because we need someone from the outside to show your experience, strength, and hope to these other individuals here. Because that place is like a revolving door. You know, guys are in and out all the time. He said, you come back and chair this meeting, you'll look up, you'll have 5 years clean. He said, because I did, you know. He said it happened to him. So I accepted, because I had already told myself I'll be back that Tuesday to the meeting, you know. I see you guys. I'll be back Tuesday. So when I got out that Tuesday, instead of waiting to come back that next Tuesday, I went to a meeting every day. You know, I felt like, well, I got to have something. I'm going to be this big-time chairperson. I got to have something to give. And his the theory of this became a reality. You know, in no time I looked up, I had 5 years. And I chaired that meeting for 10 years. It never went past the third step, you know, so I stayed real close to the basics. You know, I became very comfortable with newcomers, you know, just staying. But before those 10 years happened, you know, I had a judge in my life, or probation officer rather, who wanted me to go to a meeting once a week. And, you know, I was a little bit spiteful at that time. I said, well, I'll show her. I go to a meeting every day, you know. And I had this little sheet, you know, the little signature sheet, you know, and I'd like to cram as many signatures on that sheet as I possibly could. I wanted to fill it up, you know, and not only was it helping me, I got a lot of phone numbers that way, and I learned to use them. But that first month when I went to my probation officer, you know, and I slapped it on the desk, you know, they looked for that little one signature, and here I had 30 of them. And what she said stuck with me. She said, well, good for you. And that's exactly what it was, you know. It was no skin off of her back, you know, no skin off of her back at all. But, you know, that's what I needed. And I'm going to step back. While I was in jail, none of my buddies, you know, that I used with, nobody came to visit me. Nobody really came and put nothing in my account or anything. And I developed this resentment like, well, since they didn't come see me, when I get out, I won't go see them. Yeah. You know, so, I mean... And these were all common mistakes that I was making, you know, on my journey, you know, during those 12 years in and out, you know, in those rough last 2 years. So, you know, just making that decision to not go back around my friends, which have always caused me to relapse. And for a year, I did not go around any of them, you know, and it wasn't like I had to avoid them. It's just that I was doing different things. I was going different directions. And so I got that good jump start. I went to a meeting every single day. The only time I missed a meeting in my area was when I came to a convention here in Maryland. And I got signatures when I was here. I had my sheet, and I was getting it signed right here, you know. And lo and behold, I looked up, and I had that time. You know, I can remember going into a restaurant, just a little cafe in the courthouse when I was on probation. And a little Oriental guy, you know, sold me a cup of coffee because I had need. I needed money. Thank you, Mike. I needed money for a parking meter. So, you know, I gave him a $50 bill just to get some change. And he gave me $60 back. Yeah, shoot, and I had it in my pocket. I was getting ready. I got over. And then I realized that I couldn't keep that. You know, I couldn't keep this money because that was my old way of life. And I gave it back to him. I mean, I have never seen this guy again. You know, never seen him before. But, you know, that act of honesty, mm-hmm. you know, has lasted for 12 years. You know, and if I had kept it, you know, I would have had to live with the right. thought that I wasn't honest, that I had not grown, that I had not changed, that I had not received any type of new way of life. And I always share that with an individual because, you know, we get clean and we get these opportunities, you know, to prove ourselves worthy of it, you know, to see, you know, just how sharp our tools are, how, you know, sharp our skills are. Can we actually do this? I tried so hard to, you know, get my youngest sister into, bring her into the fellowship because, like I say, you know, we were all close together. You know, most of my family was addicted. And my youngest sister, she didn't have a choice either. She got introduced to drugs at a very early age, you know, and my oldest sister introduced her to. And she was a year younger than me. And she finally got caught stealing or boosting and got herself locked up in jail for 30 days. And that's the only way she could get clean, you know, the same way with me. And she called me up one day and she said, Larry, I got 30 days clean. And I was so happy for her because, I mean, she had to be 11 when she hit the streets. And so I picked her up from jail. And DACNA had a convention. That's the Detroit area in a convention. They had a convention. And I took her to the convention. I wanted her to see how big our family was. I wanted her to see all the recovery that was available to her. And she was trying to show me around in the place. No, we go this way. I said, look here, girl. You ain't been in this fellowship no time. Let me show you the way. You can't show me. And she had a wonderful time. She ran into some of her friends, you know, that had, some that had 2 weeks clean. She, you know, she had seniority over, you know, made her feel good. And we were riding home, and I told her, I said, you know, this disease of addiction is very powerful. You're not going to be able to get clean for 38 days and then just pick up and put that stuff in your body again, because your body, you know, has lost its immunity to it. You know, I said, you just can't do it. I said, it'll kill you. And that Thursday, you know, she died of an overdose. You know, her friends came by, and she did not know how to tell them no. She hadn't been around long enough to keep them out of her life, and she used, and she died. And but, you know, that experience I had with her at a Narcotics Anonymous convention, you know, the fact that I saw her give her children the mother that they've been wanting forever, and she gave me the sister that I had been wanting forever, you know, and I know that the reason, by her being gone, that she could not suffer, you know, that the disease of addiction could not punish her and pimp her back to the streets and do all those things to her. You know, if there's anybody in the world that I would have liked to see enjoy this new way of life, it would have been her, you know. But I'm sure where she's at, you know, there's... Yeah, she went to heaven. She ain't no drugs in heaven, you know, because she was rough. She might have went down, but I doubt it. But anyway, you know, I've only been able to keep what I have by giving it away. Like I said, keeping it basic, staying close to the newcomers, you know, putting as much effort, you know, into my recovery as I did in my addiction. I mean, like, just going at it, you know, every single day, you know. And Mike is a good friend of mine, and you know, I met him. He knew me before I knew him, because I was still out there struggling. He'd been around a while, you know, and, you know, he's family. And, you know, it's so good to get that unconditional love, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll put you down, you know, when you're struggling like that. And to know that someone was there, even though, you know, I didn't know him when I was using, I didn't meet him until I got into recovery. I just know that he understood, just to know that somebody understands our problem. And that's what, you know, keeps us together, is because we all understand, you know, we don't have to do this alone. I'm not going to ramble, you know, I'm just extremely grateful. You know, this is a new way of life, you know, it's not forced upon me anyway, it's just something that I accept, you know. This is not just a new way, it's the only way for me. So I want to thank y'all for helping me stay clean today.
Thank you, Sam.